Human creativity adds the color to our world.
Ego.
Go!
Close artichoke mode.
It's a rainbow.
It's our crowning glory as a species. But it's also deeply personal.
I think creativity, it's a desire. It's a need.
True creativity is about existence and being and giving of yourself and being honest. True creativity.
Where does this unique human ability come from? How can we harness it in our lives? I've spent the last 20 years of my life studying the human brain, how it makes us who we are. Now I'm going on a journey to unlock the secrets of creativity, to reveal how we can all tap into the neural processes behind it and transform our lives for the better.
I am somebody that I never knew I could be now.
With the help of some of the most creative minds out there,
second sticks,
okay. We'll find out what makes them tick.
If someone's like, that's weird, I'm like, yes. Then that's always kind of what I'm trying to do.
How they struggle.
You're engaged in a kind of battle. It's not like you kind of sit around on a silken cushion and ideas kind of come down. That doesn't actually happen.
And how we can all unleash our own creative potential.
You have to understand that failure is your friend that you can learn from.
Because creativity isn't the preserve of an elite few. Creativity is what human brains do.
If you visited this forest a million years ago, it would be essentially the same. The animals here haven't really changed their ways. Generation after generation, they're doing the same kinds of things. They're living the same lives that they always have.
But in the comparative blink of an eye, humans have transformed our world. And the engine driving all of this is human creativity. Someone having an idea, making something, inventing something. This strong suit of the human brain has propelled our ancestors from cave dweller to space explorer. And has given us the modern world.
I like the future, I'm in it.
Build it myself and I love it.
I'm not sure.
Personally, I'm very pleased.
No, I think it's gonna be all right.
I can dig it.
How do I like the future? Yeah. Well, the future's not here yet, man.
Smaller, but cleaner.
Right on.
I said live it or live with it.
Straight ahead.
Well, I think it has quite a great future in it. It's electric.
When we talk about creativity, you might assume I'm talking about the arts, but it's so much more than that. Take science.
I think science is inherently creative. I think you have to be able to discover something new that other people have not discovered already.
So this is your lab here?
Yeah, welcome to my lab. We're excited to have you here today.
Thank you.
Today, all the revolutionary technology in Dr. Michelle Kine's lab springs from a creative leap she made 15 years ago. A leap that also saved her career.
What brought me to the point of creativity was desperation.
At that time, her nanotechnology research required specialized equipment so that she could work at a microscopic scale. But the lab her new job had promised her was still under construction.
I was like, I don't understand how I'm gonna be able to do my work. after you've exhausted all of the known routes to get what you want, then you have to start thinking of, well, what else can I try if I want to salvage my career?
This desperation led her to get creative. She remembered a toy she loved to play with, Shrinky Dinks. In which sheets are shrunk into small hard plates in an oven without altering their shape. Could she use the same material for her nanotechnology creations?
So this is the Shrinky Dinks. It's a good old-fashioned children's toy. And you can draw on it, or you can put a thin layer of metal on it, or okay, other material on it. And then we shrink it down in our little toaster oven.
This is the shape I want out of metal, but I want it to be smaller, and I don't have the tools to make it smaller, so I'm just going to put it on that, shrink it down, and then peel it off.
Yeah, the beauty of this is that all of that surface area gets squished into this tiny little footprint, and we can make it much smaller than this, but you retain all of that surface area.
That's unbelievable.
Michelle's creative genius is to avoid working at the tiny scales involved in nanotechnology by starting big and shrinking everything down. A simple and elegant solution to an otherwise expensive technology.
I'm on a journey to understand creativity. One of the reasons this caught my eye is because of how creative it is to take a child's toy and do something with that to make a beautiful scientific instrument. And that's the beauty of this and why it captured everybody's attention in the scientific community.
In order to advance science, you have to be creative, because otherwise you're just creating the same things that have already been created, and you're thinking about things the same way everyone else has thought about it.
Michelle's clever problem solving showcases the creative ability of human beings that allowed our ancestors to take what they knew and to build on it, to improve it, to forge a new path into the future. So what's so special about the human brain? It all starts with our unique wiring.
Well, when you look at the brains of other animals, you find that the input and the output are right next to each other. There's a direct path between the two.
So when a hamster sees food, it leads to an instant reaction. The input, see food, connects directly to the output, eat food. There's little in between.
But humans, we can do something more.
Of course, when it comes to food, we can simply eat it, but we can also disengage our instincts to see food as something beyond its basic purpose. We can see food as art, tools, or even weapons.
Tonight, I was returning home from where I got to last week. When I was showing you how to defend yourself against anyone who attacks you armed with a piece of fresh fruit.
I promise we wouldn't do fruit this week.
What do you mean?
Well, we've done fresh fruit for the last 9 weeks.
What's wrong with fruit? You think you know it already?
Well, can't we do something else for a change?
Like someone who attacks you with a pointed stick.
Pointed sticks? Oh, we want to learn how to defend ourselves against pointed sticks, do we? Getting all iron mighty, eh? Fresh fruit not good enough for you, eh? Oh, well, I'll tell you something, my lad. When you're walking home tonight and some homicidal maniac comes after you with a bunch of Logan Brees, don't come crying to me! Right, the passion fruit! When your assailant lunges at you with the passion fruit, thus...
We've done a passion fruit!
What?
We've done a passion fruit!
We've done oranges, apples, grapefruit...
Whole and segments.
Pomegranates, greengages...
Grapes, passion fruits...
Lemons...
Plums...
Yeah, and mangoes in syrup.
How about cherries?
We've done them.
Red and black?
Yes.
All right then. Bananas! Oh. We haven't done them, have we? Oh. Right, bananas! How do you defend yourself against the man armed with a banana? Yeah, you, take this. Now it's quite simple to defend yourself against the banana fiend. First of all, you force him to drop the banana. Next, you eat the banana, thus disarming him. You have now rendered him helpless.
Suppose you've got a bunch.
Shut up!
He's got a pointed stick.
Shut up! Right now! You, Mr. Apricot!
Harrison.
Ah, Mr. Harrison, come with me with that banana, then come on! Attack me with it! As hard as you like, come on! Come, no! Put something into it, for God's sake! Hold it like that! Scream! Now, come on, attack me! Come on!
Why? Because during our evolution, there was an expansion of the brain regions between input and output. So in our brains, seeing something doesn't necessarily lead to an automatic response. Inputs can mix and collide with what's already there. Our brains can forge new pathways, make new connections. We can chew on ideas and think about things.
To live, a rat must chew.
So must we all. We eat or we die, eh?
I did not say eat. I said chew.
Gesundheit.
And consider possibilities. The complexity of our brains allows us to process information in almost limitless ways. And the innumerable pathways through these networks, this is the foundation of our creativity. The expansion of the human brain gave us one other important creative advantage. With the enlargement of the human cortex came the expansion of this part behind the forehead, the prefrontal cortex. And this, it turns out, is the wellspring of human imagination.
So what's happening in Hirschhorn?
Bjarke Ingels is one of the most visionary architects of his generation. He spent the last 20 years defying convention, and his imagination is his stock in trade.
Okay, I get it. We try to materialize as many aspects of the design process as possible. So we pin up things on huge boards, because if you have tons of material to work with, then you can really give the imagination something to build with.
So what if we don't change the bridge, but we just eliminate that diagonal guy?
Bjarke has designed some of the world's most innovative buildings in recent years, and he's now working in New York, designing two World Trade Center.
The ideas that you have, the concepts that you have acquired in one way or the other, are tools that will empower you to do more than you could without them. Before the Empire State Building was built, someone imagined it, then they built it, and now it's part of the real world.
Jack, the Zepp has torn loose from its mooring here in the wake of that great electrical battle, and it's floating off now past the Eiffel Tower, very near the Stonehenge Beltway.
He's got my dream bloops. There's a lot of personal, intimate things in
Mark,
those things.
Mark, you're the man who went to sleep for your country so many years ago.
Those tapes were never meant to be shown.
Can you explain what you're doing here in Panorama Land?
I mean, look at the aliens, for example. Look at that one humping the entire state building. They do that all the time.
And of course, that is what creativity is, that we actually have the power to imagine the world that isn't our world yet.
Bjarke's ability to imagine is a superpower that we all possess. The prefrontal cortex allows us to imagine what's not directly in front of us. It does this by unhooking from the present place and time and traveling elsewhere. To try out new ideas, to consider what doesn't yet exist. So, the expansion of the human brain during our evolution gave us the ability to rise above our instincts, to consider our options before we decide what to do. and it gave us our imagination, setting us apart from other animals and making us uniquely creative. So given that we're all wired for creativity, what are our brains actually doing when we engage with the creative process? The first clue to the nuts and bolts of the creative process comes from this man.
Okay, so in here.
Nathan Myhrvold, who excels in any field he turns his hand to. Bill Gates once described him as the smartest man he knew.
Well, I always have difficulty describing myself because the set of things that I do are unlikely enough that putting them together just is credibility reducing. You know, I write big cookbooks, and I invented a new kind of nuclear reactor, and I do research on dinosaurs and on asteroids.
This is our chandelier.
One of the things that is a spark of creativity is taking ideas from one place and applying them another place, maybe in an utterly different context.
This is a new camera system that I designed and we're building.
Nathan's trick for coming up with this outpouring of new ideas is to surround himself with many different influences and inputs.
It's always easier to be a critic than a creator. And if you don't fashion an environment where creators and originators can get things going, you won't have any new ideas. It's really simple.
Cool.
Nathan's focus on taking in new information and combining it with what he already knows gives us an important clue to the brain's creative process. It all goes back to those inputs. The richer and broader they are, the more the brain has to play with.
The human brain owes its creative success to the fact that inputs are constantly being smashed together with other inputs. So sights and smells and sounds and conversations and ideas, these are constantly reconfigured in the brain.
Every second of your life, inputs from the world are being worked on and combined with what's already there. Creativity isn't about one region of the brain. Instead, it emerges from the interplay of billions of neurons sending trillions of electrical impulses. Sights and sounds are mixing with memories, thoughts, emotions, new and old. So every experience you have is raw material for your brain to create with. And all these inputs get fashioned into new ideas. But how?
Hello? And hello and hello again and again and again. I'm Billy Flanagan and welcome once again to Art of the Insane. And today we're going to be discussing one of the most bedeviling problems facing the beginning or even amateur painter who wishes to reap the big profits you can make in producing Art of the Insane that's so like the real Art of the Insane that only a truly bedeviled insane person could tell the difference, which wouldn't make a fucking bit of difference to your bankroll or your wallet. Today we're going to look at this guy, Andy Warhol, who's as popular now that he's dead as he was when he was alive. And people hoped he would be dead, so the prices of his art would be driven up and up. Now, Andy Warhol was not insane. He was mired in the dull, boring world of fine art. He never could realize the big profits he might have made if he'd turned to painting Jesuses on locomotives or clowns with knives. He wasted his bright talent on detergent boxes and pictures of actors, which are things a truly insane artist would not look at twice. Now, you wouldn't want to make the same mistake, would you? Not once, not twice. course you wouldn't. Andy Warhol made fame into art, however, and you can do exactly the same thing without jeopardizing your status as insane and pricing yourself so far below the market as to make the whole painting not worth your while. So here we go to the practical part of the program. Let's take a canvas. And I think this week we're at the point where we might mention that you don't have to pee on your own canvases. No one will know if you hire it out, and this canvas, this one here, a big one, was peed on by a certain member of my family. She'll kill me if I let her secret out, but she's a good woman. Very supportive of my collection of 16th century cream rinses. Here we go. A lot of viewers ask me what color is best to start with, but they must not be watching closely because you all know the answer. It doesn't matter. Some color. Now, make a clown. I know you know how to do it. Let's have him crying. I'll use some other color now for the tears. And let's have him holding a knife, kind of waving it around. There you go. And just put a locomotive in there. Very dark, always good. Very symbolic. Mix a bunch of these tubes together. Give him some more color there, Phil. That always makes things real dark if you mix a bunch of colors in. Some smoke, maybe a little detail of that guy in the rainbow wig that's always at the hockey games. That's nice. Oh, some floating eyes. Quite disconcerting. And there you have it. Something that will increase in value the more famous you get. So start dyeing your hair and getting shot at by your girlfriends, or better yet, paint on one of your girlfriends as she shoots you in the bathtub, and you duplicate everything millions of times, and before long you'll be the toast of Toast Island and just as unhappy as you can be. Price too low to command the prices of the insane, and the subject of so much boring commentary that children of the future are preparing now to be bored by you and your stupid antics. This is Billy Flanagan for Art of the Insane.